Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 593. I'm Amy Matheny, and wow, it's not often that we have another Tennessee lesbian on the Queercast, but today it is a super big Queercast with Shelley Wright. Shelley Wright, country music hitmaker and star who came out of the closet in 2010. I can't believe it was 4 years ago. It feels like a long time ago, and it seems like just yesterday. But so much has happened to her life. We are catching up, and she has a new fundraising campaign to work on her new CD that will be coming out next year. And you have an opportunity to be a part of it and have an opportunity to get some wonderful perks and be a part, a more intimate part of Shelley Wright's art and her activism and everything that she is that she's been about these past 4 years, which has really been being a big, loud, and proud voice for the LGBT community. So Shelley Wright on the show today. I am excited to talk with her again. I really always enjoy a little jaw, as we call it in the South, which means a long talk with Shelley Wright. And also lots going on in the LGBT news and theater scene. So many shows open, and I hope you will listen to all of them and pick wisely, because there's some great theater and dance opportunities in Chicago in the months of October, November. And we have many of them that we're going to tell you about today. So Shelley Wright on the program. Sit back. It's going to be a good one.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News.
A judge in Louisiana has ruled that the state's ban on same-sex marriage is unconstitutional, in part because he says it violates equal protection rights. Judge Edward Rubin ruled that the ban violated the 14th Amendment and the constitutional requirement that gives full faith and credit to each other's laws. His ruling came in the same-sex adoption case of Angela Constanza and her partner Chastity Brewer.
A federal judge has reinstated for same-sex couples' claim against Indiana Governor Mike Pence over the state's refusal to recognize gay marriages performed out of the state. Judge Richard Young said he had initially dismissed the couple's claim against Pence, but he reinstated part of the lawsuit because Pence had shown he had power to enforce the ban despite claims he had no such control. Young did not reinstate a part of the lawsuit that challenged the constitutionality of the ban's basic provision that only opposite-sex couples may marry in Indiana.
The chief sponsor of ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, has initiated a legislative procedure known as a discharge petition to compel House leadership to bring the bill up for a vote. Representative Jared Polis, who's gay and co-chair of the LGBT Equality Caucus, filed the discharge petition with the House clerk's office. It would force a vote on ENDA, which would bar employers from discriminating on sexual orientation and gender identity, if a majority of House members sign the petition.
gay and lesbian advocate and defenders, Mary Bonato, lesbian author, Alison Bechdel, and gay playwright Samuel Hunter are among the 21 newly named 2014 MacArthur Fellows. Bonato is a civil rights lawyer whose arguments have led to historic strides in marriage equality. Bechdel was responsible for a long-running comic strip, Dykes to Watch Out For, and author of the graphic novel Fun Home, a family tragicomic from 2006. Hunter has written plays, The Whale, and A Bright New Boise. Each Genius grant provides $625,000 over 5 years.
A federal judge has ruled that Arizona must recognize the California marriage of a gay military veteran whose husband died of cancer in August and allow the vet to be named as a survivor on his husband's death certificate. U.S. District Judge John Sedgwick granted Fred McGuire's request for recognition of his marriage to George Martinez, age 62, who died August 28th of pancreatic cancer. The couple, together for 45 years, married in July in California after learning of Martinez's diagnosis.
A report from HRC has revealed that 40% of 10,000 LGBT youth aged 13 to 17 identify as bisexual, and many say they face more challenges coming out and gaining acceptance than their lesbian and gay peers. The Supporting and Caring for Our Bisexual Youth report found that only 5% of bisexual youth reported being very happy, compared to 21% of non-LGBT youth surveyed. The findings, released on the 15th annual Celebrate Bisexuality Day, also show that bisexual youth are overwhelmingly female, and they confront broad skepticism and misunderstanding about their sexual identities.
Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg said that people seeking clues about how soon the Supreme Court might weigh in on states' gay marriage bans should pay close attention to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Ginsburg said cases pending before the circuit covering Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee would probably play a role in the high court's timing. She said there will be some urgency if that appeals court allows same-sex marriage bans to stand.
Sweeping changes to Virginia's same-sex marriage laws helped draw a record crowd to Norfolk's Pride Fest 2014. Norfolk's Tim Bostick and Tony London, co-plaintiffs in the landmark case that overturned Virginia's same-sex marriage ban, were greeted as heroes. 15,000 people showed up, the most the festival has seen in its 26-year history.
In Illinois, openly gay Roosevelt University President Charles Middleton will retire on June 30, 2015. When he took on the role, Middleton was one of only two openly gay university presidents. Today, the organization LGBTQ Presidents in Higher Education, which he co-chairs, has more than 50 members.
Ben & Jerry's has made a stand in defense of same-sex marriage. The Vermont-based ice cream giant has signed an employer's amicus brief urging the U.S. Supreme Court to review pending marriage equality ban cases in Utah, Oklahoma, and Virginia. Other corporations to sign the brief reportedly include Amazon, Target, and Viacom. Ben & Jerry's has also released special pro-marriage equality flavors like Hubby Hubby in the United States and I Do in Australia.
Mary Cheney, a lesbian political consultant and daughter of the former VP Dick Cheney, made the case for Republicans to back gay rights during a keynote speech at the National Log Cabin Republicans' annual Spirit of Lincoln dinner in Washington, D.C. Cheney said support for gays is a natural fit for Republicans because freedom and equality are the founding principles of the party.
In world news, six UK universities achieved perfect scores in a guide to gay-friendly universities that LGBT rights group Stonewall released. Gay by Degree 2015 rates 158 universities across the UK against a 10-point checklist of things they should have to best support LGBT students. The universities found to be the most gay-friendly, scoring 10 out of 10, are Cardiff University, the University of Essex, the University of Glasgow, Liverpool John Moores University, Sheffield Hallam University, and York St. John University. When the guide launched in 2010, no university scored 10 out of 10.
A man in Cameroon was convicted of homosexuality because he was drinking Bailey's liquor. Homosexuality is against the law in the African country, with the penal code banning sexual relations with a person of the same sex. However, police take a broad interpretation of the law, with a court even convicting a man for drinking Bailey's Irish Cream because it's considered feminine.
A bill to create legal same-sex marriages was tabled in the Parliamentary Assembly of the Autonomous Australian Territory of Norfolk Island, putting it on a course to become the first part of Australia where same-sex couples will be able to legally marry. The bill aims to allow Australian same-sex couples to marry on their home soil rather than having to travel overseas.
In Australia, a New South Wales NSW government MP has introduced a bill to clear the records of men convicted of having gay sex under historical laws. 30 years ago, gay men faced jail time for homosexuality-related offenses in NSW. The Victorian government has also introduced similar legislation. The Victorian government decriminalized same-sex acts in 1981. New South Wales decriminalized them in 1984.
And in entertainment news, Magic Mike XXL, the sequel to Magic Mike, is set for release July 1st, 2015. Matthew McConaughey will not return, but bisexual actress Amber Heard has joined the cast. Channing Tatum returns as the titular stripper, who embarks on a road trip with his friends from the first film, including Alex Pettifer, Matt Bomer, and Joe Manganiello. Heard is the third actress to join the cast, following Andy McDowell and Jada Pinkett Smith.
Queen of Soul Aretha Franklin will drop her first new album in many years on September 30th, courtesy of Clive Davis. Franklin is slated to make a historic appearance on David Letterman September 29th to announce the album, and the lead single is reportedly a cover of Adele's Rolling in the Deep. The CD is a tribute to 10 different women, with Aretha reinterpreting their songs.
Liza Minnelli is resting comfortably in a California hospital after undergoing back surgery. Minnelli's back injury prevented her from performing most of the year or attending the funeral of Joan Rivers.
Ricky Martin has returned to the airwaves with a new single titled Adios, or Goodbye. Martin will kick off a concert series called Live in Mexico with two consecutive shows at the Palacio de los Deportes in Mexico City, October 3rd and 4th. He will tour Mexico through the end of November.
Three previously unreleased Queen tracks featuring late singer Freddie Mercury spearhead a new Queen album, Queen Forever, out Tuesday, November 11th. The tracks include a song from Queen and Michael Jackson, There Must Be More to Life Than This, a previously unfinished Mercury Queen track, Let Me In Your Heart Again, and a new stripped-down ballad version of Mercury's first solo hit, Love Kills.
MTV and Logo TV will premiere Laverne Cox Presents The T-Word on Friday, October 17th at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. With Emmy-nominated actress and transgender advocate Laverne Cox hosting, the one-hour documentary will take viewers inside the lives of seven transgender youth ranging from the ages of 12 to 24. Immediately following the documentary's premiere, Cox will host the one-hour Trans Forum live on Logo TV and MTV.com. Cox and the subjects of the documentary will discuss transgender issues as well as answer questions from a live audience and via social media.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers recently hosted an LGBT tailgate event in conjunction with Barefoot Wine and the You Can Play Project. It's thought to be the first LGBT tailgate event organized in part by an NFL team.
E! Network's Fashion Police will continue, with Kathy Griffin taking the late Joan Rivers' place. Melissa Rivers will continue to produce her mother's show and has given her blessing to Griffin.
And Times Squares, a New York-based square dancing club for lesbians, gays, and their friends, is celebrating its 30th anniversary October 23rd to the 26th, with a celebration expected to attract several hundred people. The group, founded out of a desire for a social outlet in the early days of the AIDS epidemic, is Manhattan's only square dance club and has more than 100 members. And that's the weekend news, brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey! Hey, everyone! It's Judy Gold. And I know you know this already, but you're on the Windy City Queercast. Don't leave.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of September 29th, 2014, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Porchlight Music Theater presents Stephen Sondheim's brilliant and bloody thrill ride, Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. The first production in their season of Sondheim at stage 773 through November 9th. Tickets at porchlightmusictheater.org.
Timeline Theater Company's Chicago premiere of My Name is Asher Lev is a masterpiece of a production raised to Chicago Sun-Times. My Name is Asher Lev follows a young Jewish painter torn between his upbringing and his art. Tickets are going fast for the show's limited run at stage 773. Visit timelinetheater.com.
The family of a Wall Street criminal faces the fallout of public scandal and guilt by association in Northlight Theater's The Commons of Pensacola, a new drama by actress-turned-playwright Amanda Peet. Hailed by the New York Times as rich and absorbing, laced with biting humor, this funny and incisive debut has its Midwest premiere at Northlight Theater through October 19th. Buy tickets today at northlight.org.
Writers Theater invites you to a meeting of two of the greatest minds in history. A wildly creative battle of intellects and egos in the Midwest premiere of Isaac's Eye. Playwright Lucas Nate introduces a young Isaac Newton to the great Robert Hooke, the most important scientist in Britain at the time. Don't miss Isaac's Eye at Writers Theater in Glencoe, just minutes from Chicago on the Edens or Metra. For tickets, visit writerstheater.org.
Steppenwolf Theater presents The Night Alive, the funny and frightening new drama from Connor McPherson, author of The Weir, Shining City, and The Seafarer. Tickets start at just $20. Get your seats at steppenwolf.org.
Chicago Shakespeare's King Lear is your chance to see acclaimed actor Larry Yando in the role of a lifetime. Chicago Tribune declares his performance a tour de force, the highlight of a career. And Chicago Sun-Times raised Lear is highly recommended. Now through November 9th. For tickets, visit chicagoshakes.com.
In a momentous 25th anniversary celebration, River North Dance Chicago returns to the Harris Theater Friday, October 10th and Saturday, October 11th, featuring premieres of athletic and soul-stirring dance, including Frank Chavez's all-male work In the End. River North performs one weekend only, October 10th and 11th at the Harris Theater. Visit rivernorthchicago.com.
Lifeline Theater opens its 2014-15 season of Big Stories up close with Jane Eyre, a highly theatrical adaptation of Charlotte Bronte's beloved classic. Runs Thursdays through Sundays through October 26th. More at lifelinetheater.com.
Now playing at Timeline Theater is the political conspiracy thriller Danny Casolaro Died for You. Based on true events, it tracks the real-life Danny, a cousin of playwright Dominic Orlando, as he works to uncover high-level government corruption. Don't miss the Chicago premiere running through December 21st. Visit timelinetheater.com.
On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the smash hit rock and roll musical Million Dollar Quartet, now playing at the Apollo Theater. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you, so go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
I know that every morning you go thumbing through the personal warnings. You grab the latest copy, a cup of coffee, and settle in for a good laugh. I've been trying to catch your eye, but I'm so shy. I'm hoping and praying that today's edition is gonna catch your attention, 'cause there's a single white
Well, a lot has happened to Shelley Wright in just 4 years since she was on our show. The Nashville award-winning darling of Shut Up and Drive didn't shut up. She got loud and proud, coming out of the closet in 2010 with an autobiography, Like Me, and a new CD, Lifted Off the Ground, as well as a stunning documentary of her coming out process called Wish Me Away. Well, instantly, Shelley became a prominent voice for the LGBT community and for LGBT country music fans. But that's not all. Then this single white female star married her love, Lauren Blitzer, and just over a year ago, they welcomed beautiful twin boys to their family, George Samuel and Everett Joseph. And now she's ready to make some music again and got a new approach on how she's going to be doing that, and you can be a part of it. And we're happy to have her back here on the QueerCast with us to catch up. Hey, Shelley.
Hey, Amy.
Good to be on with you again. I'm delighted to be with you. I'm just tired. 4 years, man, a lot can change in a handful of years.
It's crazy as you rattled off all of those events. It seems like that would take a lifetime to fit all that in. But you're right. That all happened in a matter of 4 years. And boy, I wouldn't change one single step of those past 4 years. I sure wouldn't.
And something happens, you know, with I think we talked about this a few years ago, of truth-telling and, you know, living your authentic life. And It really is like uncaging a bird and seeing somebody soar and fly. And so I'm not surprised by how bountiful and abundant the past 4 years have been. But if you can you just go back for me a little bit as to where you were just a couple of weeks before you came out? This journey, I think it's always great to remember, especially on a, you know, on a podcast, people can listen to us from the anonymity of their own homes or earbuds. And, it's a very safe space to maybe not be out. So I think it's just helpful to go back to like, where was Shelley Wright 2 weeks before the whole world knew?
Well, that you make a really good point that people love podcasts for that reason, I think, because it's on their own terms and in their own space. And you're right. It is a safe space for me to kind of share what was going on in my head at the time. A couple of weeks before I came out, I journal a lot, and I always have. Mm-hmm. And I look back on those journals. My anxiety level was spiked pretty high. I was really nervous and not sleeping well at all. I'd never been one to have anxiety really before in my life, because I'd always found ways to manage and control my emotions. You know, being in the closet gives you a really great skill set for detaching from oneself. Well, once I decided to come out, I took a couple of years to write my book and get myself prepared, but all of that preparation and feeling of myself, really, you wouldn't have known it by looking at me 2 weeks from my coming out date, because I thought I was having a heart attack. Mm-hmm. But also, the upside of the feeling that I had was, for the first time in my life, I knew there was an expiration date on that angst and that anxiety.
Right.
And, you know, that's the thing about, you know, well, Melissa Etheridge and I were texting maybe a couple of days ago, and she said, "How's life in the light? How I know you're enjoying it. I know you have the beautiful boys, but how much different is it than what you thought it would be?" And I said, "Well, I still can't articulate how profoundly different it is to wake up now and all of my cards are on the table. Everybody who needs to know or chooses to know about the fact that I'm an openly gay country singer, they can know it. But that compared to, say, 10 years ago, how I felt every morning. There were mornings, Amy, when I would wake up and think, okay, let's go have a great day. And then all of a sudden, that cloud would come over me. And it didn't matter if I was getting an award that day, celebrating a number one record, playing a sold-out show. All of the good stuff was always eclipsed by that secret that chased me around, that fear of, well, it's great, I just played for a sold out show, but what if somebody finds out about me today? What if my record label finds out? What if that radio station in Chicago, what if US 99 finds out and drops my record? I don't have that cloud anymore. And and unless you're a person who lives with a secret, not just being gay, but you know, maybe there's something about your past that you hope no one ever finds out, but you have a fear that they will. Mm-hmm. Unless you know what it's like to live every day with that cloud,
it's hard to explain, but I'm assuming a lot of your listeners know what that cloud feels like. And I'm so grateful doesn't even explain it. It's humbling. It's humbling to look at the life that I have now, and I made it through. I didn't take my life. I didn't have a heart attack. I mean, the stress of the life that I was living easily could have taken my life in a number of different ways. So, yeah, so it's good right now. It's really good.
Yeah, you know, as you were talking, I was just thinking, was there, you know, you've written the book, and as you said, there was an expiration date for you. I mean, there were a lot of, there was a lot of strategy and PR firms and all of that, you know, that comes with your celebrity, which probably wouldn't come with a layperson walking around the streets, you know. And I just wonder if there was that one, was there that one person that you were most nervous to tell or to find out, you know, that might have been a more intimate person? Or was it the world at large, the unknown people that were more scary to you than your known people?
Boy, that's a really astute question, but you kind of asked too. I want to address two things that you said. Okay. You know, I did have PR firms and one PR firm and my management and my team that I built to help me come out the way I wanted to come out.
Right.
But before I came out, I had it in my head that, well, it's harder for a country singer to come out than it is for, say, another person who is, you know, not in the public life. But I learned very quickly after I came out how wrong I was. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a fan club. Whether you're a person on the radio like you, you have a fan club. Whether you're a person like me, I have a fan club. Whether you're a math teacher at a high school somewhere in Nebraska, you have a group of people whose opinion and perception of you matters. That's your fan club. It's all relative.
Mm-hmm.
What I learned is the stakes are high for everybody. So if you're that favored math teacher or that favored coach or, you know, an accountant in a law firm that happens to be, you know, having been there 20 years, that's your fan base. And coming out can put that in jeopardy, can put people's perception of you in jeopardy. So that was the first thing I wanted to address, that I used to think it was harder for a public person to come out, but I totally disagree with that now.
Mm-hmm.
So your other question was it the world at large, the public at large finding out that scared me most, or a particular person in my life? And I have to say it was an equal measure, country music fans that I was nervous about and my mother. Mm-hmm. And I did not come out to my mother before I came out publicly. She and I had a strained relationship for quite some time. It was strained with my brother and sister as well from my mom. So we'd had kind of a tricky relationship. So I didn't feel a need to dial her up 2 weeks before I came out publicly and say, hey, by the way, I'm gay and I'm coming out. I figured that, you know, let the chips fall where they may. We'll, you know, hope it goes well.
Right.
And it did not go well. She called me about a week after I came out and we had a pretty tough 2-hour conversation, in which she told me that, you know, I was probably going to go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really painful. And I know a lot of people know what that experience is like.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to about 5 months ago, I got a call from my brother. And he said that he had gotten a call from our Aunt Diane, my mom's little sister. And Chris said, Aunt Diane said, Mom's sick. He said, I'm going to go down there and see what it's about and see if, you know, see if it's a serious thing. And he called me after he left her house. He said, she's pretty sick. And I said, I'm going to come. And he said, she also said she wants to wish she could meet George and Everett and Lauren. And because she had not spoken with me since I came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was something I had promised myself that would never happen. I would never put my wife and my kids in a position to have any negative feedback. Lauren was fully prepared never to meet my mom. That was okay if that was what I wanted. And, you know, when my brother said, Mom said she wants to meet Lauren and the boys, I'm going to try not to get emotional, Amy, because I haven't told this story to anybody yet. I looked at Lauren and she said, well, let's go. And so we got plane tickets for all of us. And we went home and we spent one afternoon with my mom my mom met Lauren and held the boy, fell in love with them and Lauren instantly. The next day, my brother and I and sister took my mom to the hospital for a specialist appointment, and we ended up having to drive her across the state to Wichita, and she went right into ICU, and she never left. And we, I was with her in the last few weeks of her life, and it was cancer, of course, and it was kind of, we both marveled at the miracle of compassion and reconciliation and forgiveness. And I will tell you, my mom said, and she was a religious person, and that's what was based, that's what she based her negative feedback about my being gay on. She was worried about my salvation. And I sat with her in the hospice and in the ICU, and she said, I got it wrong. She said, I missed a lot. I missed all this good stuff, and I want you to know I only just wanted you to be happy and safe. And I said, I am. And and I forgive her completely. And it was when someone you love loves you back exactly how you need to be loved, it just erased a lot of hurt. And so I guess what I want to say about that is that I meet a lot of people who confide in me that they can never, ever come out because their parents or their grandma or their sister would never accept it. And I respect that position a person feels like they're in, because I was in it. Mm-hmm. But I also want to say, I'm not saying rush right out and tell people that you're gay that might reject you. You know, it's a personal choice, and it definitely is different for everybody. But I guess I want to say that I would have bet $1 million that my mother would never have said the things she said to me in her final weeks, but she did, and it was awesome. It was a great thing.
It's a beautiful story, and I know you're a deeply spiritual person, and so I know that is a healing moment for you, and it's a divine moment for you. I
yep,
would imagine
exactly,
and I'm not surprised. You know, it is hard to. Even though it might be hard to look at the light that Melissa Etheridge referenced, it's also hard not to be drawn to it.
Great point.
And I think that I am grateful that you had that moment. I'm grateful that your mother had that moment.
Me too.
You know, for her and her life. And that's a beautiful story. And I'm also sorry for your loss. I did not know that your mom had passed. And if you see the Wish Me, if I'm speaking to the listeners, if you see the Wish Me Away video, you know, we are walked through some of that painful familial stuff that I think is familiar on some level. You know, so much of your documentary, it's like the situation, the location, the people might be different, but the feelings are so universal as LGBT people that we understand, we recognize, we see ourselves, you know, in that documentary. Well, and that's what I loved so much about the filmmakers on that film and your transparency in allowing them to really show that process.
I will say that, you know, that was all the filmmakers, you know, they, Bobby Burleffi and Beverly Kopp, it's no surprise they got an Emmy nomination for Wish Me Away. And you know, when I agreed to be a subject for their film, I said, the only way I will do it is if you don't ask me anything about editorial, don't ask me who you guys should go talk to, don't ask me the narrative of the film. You know, I knew it. I wasn't making a music video.
Right.
Where I get to have a lot of control. I knew that I knew enough to get out of my own way because, you know, the film doesn't present me as a shiny, perfect person. I made a lot of mistakes, and I have to step up and acknowledge those mistakes and crimes I committed against myself, against my own spirit, and ways in which I've hurt people that could have been avoided had I been able to feel comfortable saying I'm gay. Mm-hmm. But the thing that Bobby and Beverly did with the film was they didn't make a film about a country singer that came out of the closet. They somehow found a universal story to tell why, like you mentioned, Amy, people can, the places and locations and my job, my career, my vocation may look a little different than a lot of people's, but they see themselves in that film. And that's, I couldn't be more proud. I think it's one of the things in my life I'm most proud to be associated with is the way that they told the story of people like us.
Yeah.
And I've met a lot of straight people who say, I identify so much with that film. You know, I grew up poorer than my colleagues think I grew up, and I always try to hide that from them. That, you know, I mean, it's anything right. You try to keep a secret will, I promise you, take you down at some point. And they found the universal narrative, and boy, they did a great job.
So that year after you came out, you were Grand Marshal in Chicago of our Pride Parade. You were making appearances. You became a spokesperson for GLSEN. I mean, you were just everywhere, appearances and really trying to put your best foot forward and be useful to the community. Is that year like a blur, or do you feel like it gave you kind of grooves that now you continually walk on? Is how you want to be a part of the LGBT community?
You know, this is why I love talking to you. You speak like a poet. I do think it, you really do. You nailed it. I do think that that first year of getting out there and using my voice as best I could, which was my plan. That's why I wanted to come out the very unique way that I did, very measured, very strategic, because I did want to create a new space for my voice to be a part of the national and frankly the global discussion about equality. And that first year that, you know, I did Chicago Pride, which was, that's the biggest and best Pride I've ever done. I did Lansing Pride, Phoenix Pride. I mean, I was doing them all over the place, and it plugged me in a really raw moment in my life. I was feeling everything. It was like my nerve endings were so, so raw. I felt everything. And I think it really kind of, it just set the new, it was a new identity for me in a lot of ways. And I want to continue to be that kind of a voice and in any way I can be. And we know that situations and policies are all, they're changing. You watch the news every week and another state adds marriage equality. You know, Louisiana had big news this week. And who would have thought, last night, my spiritual advisor in the film Wish Me Away, Reverend Welton Gaddy, he was over at our apartment visiting with Lauren and me and visiting the boys. And he's from Monroe, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And we just sat with our jaws dropped in awe of the way that equality is spreading. And it is, nothing happens organically in the equality movement. Everything that happens, it's because a bunch of people sat down at a table and said, how do we get this done? Mm-hmm. And we have to be very strategic in the way that we tell the truth about our lives, because I guarantee you, people who are opposed to our equality are very strategic in the way they like to mistell. Yeah. And tell false stories about our lives. So, I'm strategic in everything I do, and I want to continue to work with my community to be strategic to make sure that there's some kid in Champaign, Illinois that doesn't have to deal with this crap.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you feel a big, because with, riding on the front of a parade that almost a million people come to view, there's also the pendulum will swing, and that can sometimes bring much more harsh backlash and people pushing against that. I mean, has the backlash been tough, or has it been entirely bearable based on, because I know it has to exist, you're a public persona and people feel like they can say anything to somebody in the public. So
yeah. they do. People who have something negative or contrary to say, they always find a way to say it. And it really is when I hold up that kind of pushback, when I hold that up to the struggle I had in the closet, it just obliterates it. It doesn't even add up on my measuring stick. Now, if I thought about it every day, about kind of the nasty emails I get on Facebook or nasty tweets about me, if I sat around and thought about it and gave it a lot of credence, it would get me down. But I really honestly, this is, I'm not trying to be overly sweet, but I honestly believe that people are well-intentioned. And the only reason they say things like that is because they just don't know any better.
Yeah.
They think they're defending God in some way.
Yeah.
They forget that all of us, God doesn't belong to them. They forget all that. They think they're doing something good. Now, some are just nasty for the sake of being nasty. But
right.
I think for the most part, you know, when Oprah Winfrey says, if you know better, you do better.
Right.
And I really believe that. And
yeah.
And it's another reason why I want to keep working for the equality movement. It's not just for the LGBT people like me. I swear to God, I want to do it for people who are burdened with bigotry. Mm-hmm. Because, who was it? Cindy Lauper was talking to Alan Cumming on NPR the other night, and I was listening to it, and it was such a beautiful, she's so dang smart.
She said that
when she met with Judy Shepard, Matthew Shepard's mm-hmm. mother, shortly after Matthew's death, I guess they sat and had a little glass of wine, and they were talking about what they could do together.
Mm-hmm.
And Cindy Lauper said, Judy, I hope you don't find this, I'm paraphrasing, I hope you don't find this offensive. She said, but not only was your son lost on that day, those boys who killed him, mm-hmm. they were lost too.
Yeah.
And she said, I want to work so that nobody has to be burdened with bigotry and homophobia. Because can you imagine living your life with that on your plate?
Well,
that's got to stink.
Yeah, and before you moved to New York, you spent a majority of your, you know, adult professional life in Tennessee, and I did too. I mean, I grew up in Tennessee before I lived in Chicago, so I spent the first half there and the second half here. And, you know, and I know those people, you know,
yep.
I know those people. And so it's sometimes living in Chicago in the gay bubble, and my podcast co-host Mitchell and I talk about this a lot, you know, I say, I just know those people, so it's easier for me, maybe not to forgive, but to understand what they don't understand. You know, it's easier
yeah.
for me to have some compassion for them. And at the same time, I don't become a doormat. I don't try to shrink. I try to express, you know, my views. And
right.
But I know those people. And when you know those people, I too can't see them just as villains or bad people or... you know, I too see them as lost, and I've seen
right.
enough transformations
exactly.
too, not exactly like your mom's, but along those same lines, you know, time and time again. Did you always want to be, sorry, go ahead.
And that's the, maybe we're being Pollyanna about it, but that's just the only way I can survive. If
that's
I
right.
sit around and assume that everybody who says a hateful thing to me really hates me, that,
yeah.
I think that might be too much to handle. So
yeah.
I'm with you on
yeah.
that. What were you going to ask? Were you going to ask if...
I was hearing little noises in the back, and I was wondering, did you always want to be a mom? I mean, was this a part of your story once you met Lauren and you all decided to get married, that, you know, having kids was a part of your story that
yeah.
you wanted?
I'm really glad you asked that. When you are told for a long time that, well, you can never be on the football team because you can't throw and you can't run. Or you can never be in the band because you can't play an instrument, or you're not talented enough to be in the choir because you're tone deaf. After hearing things long enough that you can't, and getting the message that you're not going to be allowed to be in that group,
yep.
eventually you start saying, I hate band. I hate football.
Right.
Why would I want... You know, why would I no, I don't want kids. So for a long time, I had tried to convince myself that, well, I just said, no, I don't think I'll have kids. You know, this was me in the closet talking to my friends who didn't know I was gay.
Right.
And a lot of my friends are still surprised. They were like, I can't believe you had kids. I just always got the feeling you would never have kids. Well, the reason they got that feeling is because I thought I was never going to make the team.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I wouldn't have a child in the closet. I wasn't going to do that to me or my partner or my child, for that matter. So I thought it would just be me and Miss Minnie, my puppy. But then prior to coming out, I started to see, maybe in the 6 months before I came out, I started to see the reality of what I could have anything.
Mm-hmm.
I could do... I was finally on, I got to be in the game. I got to be, you know, on the team. And when I met Lauren, part of our, hitting it off was we both wanted family. And I will say this, though. I know a lot of LGBT people who don't have kids, maybe for some of the reasons that I just mentioned, or maybe, you know, the clock got to ticking and they missed their window. My straight friends used to tell me when I'd say, I love Miss Minnie, my Yorkie, when I'd say, oh, I love her so much, she's my baby, they would say, without knowing they were killing me, they would say, oh, well, you don't know love until you have a real human child. You think you love that dog, but you don't know love until you have a baby. Mm. And I used to think that used to really hurt me. And now that I have kids, I am here to tell you, the love I had for my dog was the same love that I have for my children. I'm not kidding. Feeling that you have that child, you will do anything. Your dog gets sick, you go and spend more on your dog's care than you would on your own health care. It's the same feeling that nothing is better than being right here with my puppy. Mm-hmm. Nothing is better than holding this child. So if there are any people listening to our discussion today that feel like they missed something, don't let anybody tell you that that whatever, you know, love that you may have for a little, your pet or your niece or your nephew that I had for mine, it's the same thing. And it's just more legal and more expensive with human babies.
And more painful if you go through the process of caring for them.
Right, right. Well, I had a C-section. I really wanted to deliver, but I had an emergency C-section. I wanted to deliver, you know, the old-fashioned way, but it didn't work out that way. But believe you me, I feel like I suffered my appropriate amount.
No, you do. It's hard to heal after a C-section too. So now you're making music and living in New York and not Nashville. You're married. You're out. You've got kids. I mean, you've got to be writing about different things than. You know, Shelley Wright living in Nashville was writing more than a decade ago. So is music flowing? Are you writing a ton right now? And what are the themes happier or what?
Well, this album will certainly not be as dark as Lifted Off the Ground was. That was mm-hmm. a completely dark, ominous record, which reflected, those couple of years I had as I was deciding to come out. I can honestly tell you, I feel that I haven't noticed a difference in my writing. The only thing different from then and now is that before, if I'd write a song about somebody that I loved, if I tried it out on a show or something, trying out new material, I would just do the song and not tell about circumstances, why I wrote it or where mm-hmm. I got the idea or about who it was about. Now I can say, here's a song I wrote about Lauren, or here's a song that I wrote. I was watching this movie with the boys, and then this happened. My music really was one of the only ways that I felt like I was always genuine. Mm. You as a country artist, as a person who, you know, writes and performs country music or Americana music, or some might call it folk, you don't really have to have lived everything. You know, I often say I'm pretty sure Johnny Cash never shot a man in Reno just to watch him die.
Right.
You know, country music is just about telling really compelling stories. And even if I was writing a song about, you know, it may have seemed like a man and a woman, I was thinking about my partner, my female partner at the time.
Yeah.
I've never been married or divorced, but I had a song called She Went Out for Cigarettes about a wife who left her husband. So, I did write a lullaby recently. So that might be the only vastly different thing about mm-hmm. writing for me these days.
So what about these realities of Nashville and labels and doing it on your own? I mean, has it been the impact of coming out that's made you want to start a new way of funding this CD and to have that integrity of being able to do it the way you want to do it? Or is it some of that pushback that we talked about earlier that has made you search for new solutions so you can keep doing your thing?
Well, you know, crowdsourcing is interesting, right? We've watched it kind of emerge in the past couple of years. And I watched people doing crowdsourcing. Some of my indie band friends or singer-songwriter artists a couple of years ago, and I thought, well, that's interesting and innovative. I would never do it, but that's cool. But then, you know, I don't know if you know, Zach Braff did a Kickstarter yep. this year for a film.
Yeah.
And I watched him do an interview about it because someone said, you know, why are you asking fans for money? And he said, all I'm asking them to do, you know, is like pay the ticket price up front. And he said, believe it or not, studios aren't flinging millions of dollars at me to make projects. He said, I still have to get creative. And my situation with making my record with a Kickstarter campaign isn't because, you know, my record label, Vanguard Records, they put out Lifted Off the Ground. Well, I licensed it to them. So I made it by myself, paid for everything by myself, and then I licensed it to them, which is probably what I'll do with this record. But the difference is, you know, before I went out of pocket $250,000 to make that record. That was, you know, out of my pocket. And the way that Kickstarter is, you know, you can have fun with your fans, and some fans want a unique experience to come hang out at the studio for a day or go bike riding with me for a day. And to me, the way that, you know, music has changed, we don't sell as many records as we used to. People just seem to watch music online on YouTube, and we don't get paid for that. So the business model of music, commercial music, these days is vastly different than it used to be. And I thought it would be a way that I can engage and continue to tell my story. And I did lose some fans when I came out. I'm not gonna lie to you. I lost a good chunk of fans, and I guess I kind of wanted to just reengage and help build the excitement for my project. And the fans have always been the best part of my career. And it's, you know, I've spent 4 years advocating and doing, you know, I founded the Lightning Lighthouse in Kansas City, an LGBT center there. You know, that's good work that I did, and I'll continue to do that work, but I need to get back down to business and the business of making records, and Kickstarter just seemed like the perfect opportunity.
Well, and we saw with Steve Grand, All-American Boy, you know, he had huge success with it. You mentioned Zach Braff. I mean, Veronica Mars, the television show, is making a film. So, I mean, it is a model
Absolutely.
Now we're seeing, you know, from very small artists who, you know, is kind of like a YouTube phenomenon, Steve Grand, to, you know, bigger celebrities and artists, you know, finding a way to... you know, to source it themselves. And I do think that these crowdsourcing sites are very important, and they allow you to feel a part of. And even though you may have lost a bunch of country fans, you know, I'm sure a lot of LGBT people now are supporting you who maybe didn't even know who you were before and have discovered you because
exactly.
you're a part of this community now. And I think with
exactly.
something like this, with LGBT artists, it can be a political stand too for us as LGBT people to... you know, I always say, you know where you're, whether you're drinking a beverage or buying a car or doing anything, you know, look at who is putting money into our community,
mm-hmm.
because they keep our media alive and they keep our projects and our artists and our, you know, our shows alive, and our stories being told, and help our visibility. So I think that's
exactly.
important, right? And this is a way where it's not a corporation, it's just Shelley, you know? It's like, let's support Shelley and her
exactly.
success.
And one of the things I was talking to my wife, Lauren, about before I decided to do a Kickstarter, I was kind of mulling it around. I said, hon, I feel uncomfortable. You know, this is my 20th year in country music. I've never asked a fan to do something for me before. I've asked them to donate for charities that I've been involved with.
Right.
God knows I've done, you know, in my country music career and my advocacy career as a gay person, I've done every type of charity event that you can imagine. But I said, I've never asked someone to give something for me, and I'm uncomfortable with it. And she said, I'm going to tell you something. She said, you need to remain Shelley Wright, the person who makes records and tours. And she said, this is as important to your advocacy work, because if you stop making music, then you're no longer an out and proud, active recording artist. She said, you can't let go of this part of you. And she said, the advocacy movement needs you to continue to be
right.
as big a star as you are. And,
that's right.
And that really kind of hit home with me. That's why we added an equality pledge level mm-hmm. on our Kickstarter. And the equality, everyone knows that the money from Kickstarter does not go to charity, but
right.
that I want to be clear, the equality pledge, and you can watch the video on Kickstarter because I explain it in length, but I said a lot of fans want to support me because they've been a fan of mine for a long time. Some fans become fans of mine when I came out and reached out and said, you know, I hate country music, but how can I help you?
Yeah.
I want to support what you did by coming out. And so that's why we established the equality pledge level, because I want everyone, I want people, the press, to see at the end of my Kickstarter, more people donated in the name of equality more than any other reward level yeah. in my entire Kickstarter campaign. And you know what, Amy? It's true. More people are giving in the name of equality. Just, it's like mark my name down with a check of, I'm giving you $25 because yep. you came out.
Yep.
And I was, hate to say that I was right, but not really, I was right. And,
yeah.
and so if you want to support me just because you want to pat me on the back for coming out of the closet, I will take it and I'll go do my best with that power that you've given me.
Yeah. And you get a copy of the, you get a digital download and a copy of the CD. So, I mean,
yeah.
for $25, you get something back too, besides the feeling good and being in solidarity with,
you know, not for nothing, but
You get something.
But you get the record.
yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, the Kickstarter campaign has so many levels, and even at the same price point, sometimes if you get $50, you can either get the book or you can get, you know, you can come to a meet and greet.
Yeah.
And so there's so many great levels in which, you know, you can be a part of things. You even have some levels where people get to sing on your CD, which is huge.
I'm telling you, a couple of gals, some guys and some gals have already signed up. I think there are a couple more available for that pledge level. But I went to one gal's SoundCloud that she bought the I'll Sing on Your Record pledge. She's really good. Now,
yeah.
I'm sure that in the pile of people who sign up to sing on my record, we'll probably have one who isn't a very good singer, and I'm prepared to work really hard with them to get a good performance out of them.
Yeah.
But this one gal, I'm telling you, you're going to hear her voice on the record, and she's really good. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah. And also you have an offer of a house concert. So you will do an hour long concert in a person's home for up to 20 of their friends. And so, I mean, that's an amazing exclusive experience as well. So, I mean, there are, I mean, from, you know, like you said, from $10, $25 on up, you know, you can really be a part of this. And, And it's really exciting. And I see that you're, you know, we've talked some about, you know, Nashville versus New York, and, you know, your life closeted living in Nashville and then mm-hmm. living in New York. And I know that one of your pledges is that, you know, you're going to be at the CMA Music Fest in 2015 in Nashville. And how does it feel to go home? I know it's not your home where you're born.
Yeah.
How does it feel to go home, and how have you felt? It's been some time now, and things
yeah.
changed with your mom.
Yeah.
How has it been with Nashville as kind of your Nashville family?
Well, I will say that Nashville will always be home to me. I lived 20 years there. I became a grown-up in Nashville, and all of my dreams... Nashville is the town that made my dreams come true.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of friends still in the music industry and in Nashville proper that are really supportive of me. You know, these are largely people who don't have a public platform to, you know, with a half a million followers to say, hey, I'm proud of my friend Shelley Wright for coming out. That's why if you've read headlines about Nashville kind of getting silent on me, that's what I'm talking about. I've had support from people in the industry and people in the town, but we still need some really big stars not to just come out and say, you know, I love my gay fans, I don't judge anybody. That's not support. I don't know what that is, but it's not support. Let's be very clear mm-hmm. about country music stars. Carrie Underwood has done it right. She said in an interview almost 2 years ago, I think gay people should get to marry the person they love. I don't understand why they can't. That is advocacy. That is a gay-friendly country music artist. Now, I hear rumblings and blogs about, no, but this one's gay-friendly. Oh, no, that one is gay-friendly. Be very careful and listen to what it is those artists are saying. Most of the time, it is, I'm not here to judge. I love everybody. That's not LGBT affirming.
Yes.
And if they say, I love the sinner, hate the sin, that is not LGBT. And if they say, well, we're all sinners, I love my gay fans, don't be confused and tricked by that shell game. That is not an LGBT-friendly country music artist. So we have a ways to go in Nashville. I'm always working on that front behind the scenes, too, to try to help Nashville get it right. But to go back to Nashville and be a part of the CMA Music Fest, which was always called the Fanfare, and then they changed it a few years ago, feels really good. It feels really good that I'm going to go home to Nashville and do a show like I've never done before. I'm going to do, because I'm celebrating 20 years of having records out, I'm going to do all 20 of my singles. I've never done a show like that, so I'm really excited to see old fans who have always come to see me, and quite frankly, to drag some new ones to Nashville and show them around my town.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think in early 2015, we had a talk again and get like a bus tour heading to Nashville to support you. I think that would be one of the biggest things, is if you had a huge amount of solidarity and support, you know, at Fanfare this year. And you'll have a lot of people who have supported this Kickstarter campaign, too, to help rally from, you know, from all over the U.S. to make a trek to Nashville in 2015. It's usually in the summer, right? It's like early, like June or something like that.
In June.
So in our own gay prideness, we can head to Tennessee. Tennessee's beautiful in June. So and support Shelley and be a part of that experience, because I think that's going to be really huge. I'd bring a camera crew. I'm bringing a camera crew is all I'm saying.
I love it. Well, you know,
documentary number two there somewhere and all of that, you know, I do.
Well, if you can make the trek to Nashville in June of 2015, make it. But if otherwise you're listening today, and I just can't say enough for the help on Kickstarter. I mean, that, and go hit that equality pledge. I mean, that's the one I want. I want, when the articles are written about our Kickstarter, because there'll be a press release when it finishes, I want it to show up that the biggest pledge level was the equality pledge. I just want to go show that off.
Yeah. Well, and most of us can give $25, you know, to do that. We'll get a CD, we'll get a digital download, and we have shown our solidarity with you. Shelley Wright, you are always such a delight, and always so open, and a great just to spend some time with you. I kind of feel like we sit on the front porch, which I enjoy.
I know. Amy, it's always good to talk to you. And again, you ask some of the best, most poetic questions I've ever been asked. I love talking to you.
Well, you're sweet. I think you just get me, because we're Tennessee girls.
Tennessee lesbians. You get me. You like me.
Exactly. I'm like you. That's what it is. Shelley's Kickstarter is going to be linked in our show notes. It's really easy, but Kickstarter is such a friendly and easy to use site. So if you just go to Kickstarter.com, you're going to find Shelley if you just look up Shelley Wright. But we'll have her direct link right to her her campaign. There's not much time left, but a little bit of time left, depending upon when you download this and listen to our show. I believe the campaign goes through, it's going through when? October 9th. October 9th. Thursday, October 9th. So, you know, be sure to click on it and you know, share the link on Facebook and Twitter. That's a little piece of activism you can do today. Help Shelley get the word out to your friends and your fans, because you have your fans, as Shelley said, too, and she needs connected to those as well. And for more on Shelley and to keep up with her appearances and everything, we'll have her site linked as well. Super simple, Shelley.com, Shelley.com. Shelley, thanks so much. And I know you're going to surpass your goal, but we're all going to be the ones helping you do that. So thanks for being on the show.
Thanks to your listeners. And if anyone makes a pledge, put in the comments that that you guys heard me on the show today, because that'll warm my heart to know that that's where you heard about it. Awesome. And thank you so much, Amy.
You're welcome. Thanks, Shelley.
You bet.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY.
Well, everybody, go to Kickstarter, support Shelley Wright. I know I am going to. In upcoming weeks, we're going to be talking about transgender issues with the new hit. It's been called a hit before it's even premiered, but I'm going to be watching the series this week, Transparent, with our good friend Alexandra Billings, plus much, much more. Mitchell and I hopefully will have a little talk about Transparent, and hopefully you'll go to Amazon Prime and watch Transparent yourself. It's going to be so important that LGBT stories get good ratings and good returns. They've invested a lot of money, and everyone from Entertainment Weekly to People Magazine to everyone who talks about television and the hot new shows this year, Transparent has been at the top of the list. Jeffrey Tambor, Judith Light, and an all-star cast head up this story of a man transitioning. So we're going to be talking about that. Deb Pierce coming up in upcoming shows, be on the podcast with us and some other special guests. So I hope you have a great, great week. These dog days of summer, right? Eke them out, get a nice walk in. I know I'm trying to enjoy the weather. And next time I talk to you, we will be in the month of October. Have a great week, everyone. He's looking for a man like Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.